Morning, everyone.
We are reading in Book 10, the Book of the Double Twilight, Canto 4, the Dream Twilight of the Earthly Real. We are coming towards the end of that canto, and we've reached page 663, line 806. Then death, the last time, answered Savitri. Line 806. We'll go this way round. Helmut?
Then death, the last time, answered Savitri. If truth supreme transcends her shadow here, severed by knowledge and declining vasts, what bridge can cross the gulf that she has left between her and the dream world she has named? Or who could hope to bring her down to men and persuade to tread the harsh globe with wounded feet, leaving her unapproachable glory and bliss, wasting her splendor on pale earthly hair? Is thine that strength, or beauty of mortal limbs, or soul who flutters
Thank you. Some weeks back on page 655, we read Death's challenge to Savitri. Show me the body of the living truth, or draw for me the outline of her face, that I too may obey and worship her. Then will I give thee back thy Satyavan. But then he goes on to say that here on earth there are only facts and steel-bound law, the laws of matter. But Savitri answered him. She gave him a long answer, which we have been reading. We came to the end of her answer to him last week. And we read her saying, who can show to thee, death, truth's glorious face? And saying that if you could touch the truth supreme, you would grow suddenly wise and cease to be. And then she spoke about us. If our souls could see and love and clasp God's truth, its infinite radiance would seize our hearts, our being in God's image be remade, and earthly life become the life divine. So Helmut has read on from there the reply of death. Death is trying to again make an unbridgeable gulf between the higher levels of consciousness and our earth here. He says, if truth supreme transcends, goes beyond the shadow of her that we see here and is cut off from the earth by knowledge and the climbing vasts, what kind of bridge can cross the huge gap that she has left between her and the dream world she has made? How can truth come down to men? Who could hope to bring truth down to human beings and persuade truth to live here on this harsh globe? It would wound her feet. Who can persuade her to leave her unapproachable glory and bliss and come and waste her splendor here on this pale earthly air? And he challenges Savitri again. Can you do that? Is thine that strength? He agrees that she's beautiful in a human way. You have the beauty of mortal limbs, but you're a soul which, like a butterfly or a moth or a captured bird, is just struggling to escape my net of death. But then he asks her who she really is. Would you read, Jocelyn, please?
Thy voice carries the sound of infinity. Knowledge is with thee. Truth speaks through thy words. The light of things is beyond kind in thine eyes. But where is thy strength to conquer time and death? Hast thou God's force to build heaven's values here? For truth and knowledge are an idle dream. If knowledge brings no power to change the world, if might comes not to give to truth or right, a blind force, not truth, has made this ignorant world. A blind force, not truth, orders the lives of men. By power, not might, the great gods rule the world. Power is the arm of God, the seal of faith.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines?
Yeah, does your window agree with this? Only pro tem light are meaningless. Unless you have power, you can't change it. Yes, sir.
Of course, this is death speaking,
yes,
not Sri Aurobindo.
But
there's a certain truth in it, no? The highest knowledge should bring the power to change things. It shouldn't just, and the knowledge, the higher knowledge, shouldn't just be used to leave this world unchanged as it is, no? But Sri Aurobindo certainly doesn't agree with these lines that say, a blind force, not truth, has made this ignorant world. A blind force, not truth, orders the lives of men. In fact, Savitri has been affirming that behind all the apparent discords and imperfections and failures, truth is at work. Truth has made this world. And that's why he's challenging her. Show me.
Power
is needed to change the world, yes. But divine power, not our blind human power. He's saying it is not the light of knowledge that allows the gods to control the universe, the world. It is their power. Power is the arm of God, the seal of fate. Of course, the great Rakshasas would like us to believe this, and because they have power, they are sanctioned by the divine. He said, what does he say? If there is no power, how can the truth express itself? Truth and knowledge are an idle gleam, a faint, useless little gleam of light, if might comes not to give truth her right. If there is for power, yes. Power, might, strength, force, they are all similar senses.
I'm not God.
Yeah, the arm of God by which he does his actions and enforces his rule. When we see pictures of the ancient gods, they always have signs of power, no? They have their thunderbolts, their vajras, their chakras, the signs that they have the power to enforce their will. Yes, like a king will put his stamp to show that it's his command, the seal. Yes?
So maybe I'm completely ignorant, but blind cross, no truth, all is the lives of men. It's a very attractive sentence for explaining the reality on earth.
Yes, yes. And it's what we are tempted to believe, as with all these statements of death. We think, oh yes, that's how it is. It's not truth that's ruling this world. It's some kind of unconscious determinism that makes us act the way that we do. So we will see what comes next. Mila.
O human claimant to immortality, reveal thy power, lay bare thy spirit's force. Then will I give back to thee sacrament. Or if the mighty mother is with thee, show me her face that I may worship her. Let deathless eyes look into the eyes of death. An imperishable force touching good things, transform earth's death into immortal life. Then can thy death return to thee and me. The prostrate earth perhaps shall lift her gaze and feel near her the secret glory of God. And love and joy overtake
free
time.
Yes. So this is the last time that death is answering Savitri. And he addresses her as a human being. You're a human being and you are claiming immortality. Show me your power. Reveal this force of your spirit that you've been keeping hidden, and then I will give you back Satyavan. And he's begun to recognize that Savitri is supported by the Supreme Divine Mother. So now he says, if the Mighty Mother is with you, show me her face. Then he acknowledges that he will have to worship her. Let her deathless eyes look into my eyes, the eyes of death. Perhaps if her imperishable force, her deathless force, can touch all these brute things here in the material world, and perhaps it can transform death, which is a consequence of living in a world dominated by matter. Perhaps death can be changed into immortal life. That would enable dead Satyavan to return to you and live again on earth. And perhaps this prostrate earth, this earth who is so low and flat and at the bottom of the whole creation, perhaps she'll be able to lift up her eyes and feel close to her the secret presence of God. And perhaps then love and joy will overtake, not just catch up with time, but overtake time, go beyond wherever it is that time has reached, that the process of evolution has reached now, to be able to go beyond that.
Time there indicates evolution also.
Time is or evolution is the will of the divine being worked out in time. Tuan.
And Savitri looked on the and answered not.
Almost it seemed as if in his simple shape the world's darkness had consented to heaven light, and God needed no more the inconscient scream. A mighty transformation came on her, the halo of the indwelling deity, the immortal's luster that had lit her face and painted its radiance in her body's house, overflowing made the air a luminous sea. In a flaming moment of apocalypse, the incarnation thrust aside its veil. A little figure in infinity, yet stood and seemed the Eternal's very house, as if the world's center was her very soul, and all white space was but its outer world.
Thank you. So Savitri doesn't answer. She just looks at him. I haven't counted how many times in these last books the appearance of death changes. Perhaps this might be the fourth time. We earlier on in this canto, we had heard a change come about in the tone of his voice when he spoke, a kind of transformation. But now it seems as if his symbol shape, this form that he has put on to interact with Savitri, as if all the darkness of the world has accepted the light of higher consciousness, as if God no longer needs to hide himself behind this screen of the inconscient, the darkness of unconsciousness. So there's a change in the appearance of death. Savitri sees that. And a change comes about in her also. Her form, a mighty transformation came on her. You know what is a halo? It's the light around that is shown around holy beings, saints and sages in iconography. So there had all along been a special light in her face. Sri Aurobindo says that this light was the halo, the aura, the golden aura of the deity dwelling within her, the light of the soul. That had been lighting up her voice, her face, but it had been hiding its radiance, covering it as if with a tent in the body. Now that light overflows and makes the whole air around her into a luminous sea. And there's a flaming moment of apocalypse. An apocalypse is when the divine truth is revealed. It's just for a moment. This incarnation, the being who is incarnated in human Savitri, puts aside its veil, reveals itself. There is little Savitri, little human Savitri, seen in the context of infinity, and yet she's standing there in her human form, but she seems to embody or house the eternal, as if the very center of the world is her soul, and all wide space, the entire manifested universe, is like an outer robe of that center which she's carrying in her soul. Is it clear? Shall we go on? Would you read?
A curve of the calm hauteur of far heaven descending into earth's humility. Her forehead and body the omniscient gaze. Her eyes were two stars that watched the universe. the power that from her being summit green, the presence chambered in lotus sacrifice, came down and held the center in her bride, where the mind's lord in his control rooms. There flowed from concentration's native seed. He opens that third mysterious eye in man. The unseen eye that looks at the unseen. And light with a golden ecstasy fills his country. And the eternal's wisdom drives his choice, and eternal will seizes the mortal's will.
Thank you. So, describing Savitri's appearance, Sri Aurobindo again describes her brow. He has described it at several places in the poem. Now, in this transformation that has happened, her forehead's span, he says, it's like a curve of the calm altar of far heaven. In English, this word altar means a sense of superiority. If you, you know, you look from a high place down at everybody else. But of course, in French, the word just means a height. So it's as if her forehead span is an image of the high curve of heaven as it descends from its heights towards the humble state of earth, of matter. And that span of the forehead is vaulting like a roof, a curved roof. The gaze that's coming out of her eyes, the gaze of the omniscient, the all-knowing, and her eyes look like two stars that are watching the universe, seeing everything. The power that from her being's summit reigned. This is the power that we have seen Savitri unite with in Canto 5 of Book 7, when she discovers her soul and comes into contact with her central being, the Supreme Divine Mother. That power that's been ruling her being from its very highest level, this presence that she's been carrying in her heart, in lotus secrecy, in the secret chakra of her heart. That power came down and it held the center here, the center in her brow. Yes, yes. He describes the third eye here. He says this center is where the Lord of the mind, the mental Purusha, sits in his control room and controls what goes on. And he also says that this is the native seat of concentration. If we want to concentrate, this is one of the places the power is seated here. And that's where the mind's Lord can open up the third mysterious eye in man. And that is the eye of the unseen, the invisible, which looks through and sees the unseen. And when that third mysterious eye opens, then light, the truth light, with a golden ecstasy can fill the human brain, and then his choice, his will, is driven by the wisdom of the eternal, and the eternal will seizes the mortal will. So we have seen this process of transformation, as I said, in Book 7, Canto 5, when after having found her soul, Savitri calls to the Mighty Mother to come and inhabit her whole being. And there we read how the power comes down, and as its feet touch the heart center, then the Kundalini awakens and rises up and opens all the chakras one by one. There's a transformation process that happens. And Sri Aurobindo described there what is the change that comes about in each of the centers. No? Now he's going to do that again. But this is a higher level of transformation. So first into this center here in the brow. And then it comes into the throat, rosa. Thank you. Anything to ask about this passage?
It's possible you explain moving in harmony with the cosmic
force. It means that her life force, the dynamic force of her life, is in tune with the movements of the world soul, the soul that is inhabiting and directing the world, moving in harmony with the thought of the universe, the cosmic thought which has given everything its place. And then there's this interesting image about God's Son gliding into the mystic cave where he hides his light from the pursuing gods. Yes, Don?
So in opposition to the Plato cave, where the cave masks the truth and we see only shadows.
Yes, but how can it be like that unless God has deliberately hidden himself? Of course, in the Vedas we have this story, and it's also in Greek mythology, about how the cows of light, the rays of light, have been stolen by hostile powers and hidden in the deep inner heart cave, the cave of the subconscient or subliminal. In the Greek story, it is actually, I think, the mind power, Hermes, that takes these golden cows backwards into the cave so that it looks as if their hooves are going in the opposite direction. It can't be traced where they have hidden in the cave. But here, it is as if God's Son willingly has hidden itself in this mystic cave for a purpose. And the cosmic powers are trying to find him, the pursuing gods. For the time being, he's hidden. In his own good time, he'll reveal himself. But he says also that the lotus of the heart center, the deep heart center, is housing the force that can alter fate. And I think if we take that in the context of other passages in Savitri, we can say that this force that can alter fate is the force of divine love hiding deep in the heart. Would you read?
It glided into the lotus of her heart.
No, this we have read. Read the next sentence, please. It poured.
It poured into her navel's lotus depths, lodged in the little life nature's narrow home, on the body's longings grew heavenly rapturous flower, and made desire a pure celestial. Broke into the cave, where coiled world energy sleeps, and smote the thousand-hooded serpent force, the blazing tower, and clasped the world self above. Joined matter's dumbness to the spirit's hush, and filled earth's acts with the spirit's silent power. Thus changed, she waited for the word to speak. Eternity looked into the eyes of death, and darkness saw God's living reality.
Thank you. This it is the power and the presence that is ruling from the summit of her being. No? It has moved down into the brow, into the throat, now it into the heart, now it goes further. The navel center, it poured into her navel's lotus depth, and then even lower, the next, the little life nature's narrow home. This has a transformative effect on all those little longings that we experience, our desires and wishes. And it goes even lower into the Muladhara, the lowest chapter, chakra, the cave where the coiled world energy sleeps. So perhaps the Kundalini gets individually expressed in each of us, but now that Savitri is universalized, this is the whole world energy that wakes up in her. No? The thousand-hooded serpent force that towered up, blazing, and embraces the world self above, so that it forms a connection between the dumbness, the inability to express itself of matter. It gets that gets connected to the silence of the spirit, which contains within it all powers of expression, and that world energy fills even the acts here in the world of matter with the silent power of the spirit.
Spore means that smote, that light
to smote
a serpent.
Yes, and wakes it up. It's sleeping, now suddenly it wakes up. And so Savitri continues to wait. She's waiting for the word to be given. Through her, eternity looks into the eyes of death, and death, representing all the darkness of the world, looks back and sees God's living reality. Don.
Then a voice was heard that seemed stillness itself, or the low, calm utterance of infinity when it speaks to the silence in the heart of sleep. I hail thee, almighty and victorious death, a grandiose darkness of the infinite, O void that makest room for all to be. Hunger that gnaws at the universe, consuming the cold remnants of the suns, that eatest the whole world with thy jaws of fire. Waster of the energy that has made the stars, inconscience, carriers of the seeds of thought. meshes in which all knowledge sleeps entombed and slowly emerges in its hollow breast, wearing the mind's mask of bright ignorance.
Thank you. No, I don't think so. She's really acknowledging his role in the universe.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, actually, that is
yes.
What does nescience mean?
Nescience, not knowing.
What does it mean by wisdom of the energy made by the stars?
Yes, that's one of the roles of death, is to be this hunger, this force of entropy that kills everything, no, that universal death. But you are the inconscience, which seems to be the basis of consciousness in this universe. That inconscience is carrying in it, you're carrying in you the seeds which will sprout into thought. You are the not knowing, in which all knowledge is sleeping as if in a tomb, but from which all knowledge can wake up. In fact, that's what it's doing. That's what the evolutionary process is, that all knowledge is slowly emerging in higher and higher, more evolved forms of consciousness. And at the moment, it is wearing the mind's bright mask of ignorance. Yes, there's a certain light. Mind represents a certain light. It's not a total darkness. It's a bright mask of ignorance. It's not the full knowledge. And that mask can deceive us. It can make us think that we've understood things, no? Or that we have the knowledge. But it's only a mask of the true
knowledge
and incomplete knowledge and misleading knowledge also,
yes.
Ignorance.
So we are ignorant of the fact that we are ignorant.
We should be aware of that, I think. Human beings should be aware of that. Yeah. Chico? Sorry. Yes, I mean, if we listen to the physicists, they can describe to us very clearly all these bright lights in the universe that we think that are stars. Actually, they may be galaxies, billions of stars. All of these are suns, and the suns are the material symbols of the Supreme Truth, light, energy, power, of the divine power and presence. But these material suns in our universe, they are also subject to the law of evolution and the law of death. No? They grow and then they die in one way or another, as a supernova or as a black hole or in various different ways, depending on their composition. So what is that force, that energy, which is causing all that dissolution and destruction? We call it entropy. The physicists call it entropy. We could also think of it as death. And the Vedic rishis thought of this force. They described him as the eater, the one who's eating everything up. And as he's eating things up, he's himself being eaten. There's a force that's eating everything up. Does that answer your question? Yeah? Okay.
My understanding of life is a violation of entropy. We have no business being alive if entropy is the case.
But
I don't think there's an explanation. I've read that there's no explanation.
But we are only alive because we eat things, no?
We give them a new life. We take their life and
yes. No, what the scientists have not been able to understand is how this relatively conscious life could emerge from unconscious matter. But in fact, the processes are similar. And now more and more, the biologists are seeing that the mechanisms of life are very similar to those of higher consciousness, that these plants are all communicating with each other. But still, just like we have to somehow take in energy and use it and discard it when it's become polluted and useless to us, that work is going on in all living forms. And we could even say that it's going on with the material forms. If we listen to the physicists and how they describe the evolution of matter, how from some kind of primal plasm by a process, I think, of friction, of coming together and friction and convergence, the stars have lit up. They weren't all there at the beginning. And it's in the stars that the more complex elements get built up, the elements that go to make up life, living matter, on our planet, on all planets. So death in the Indian tradition is the being, the cosmic power that regulates all that. He regulates, governs all that. He is Yama, he's death, he's the eater, but he's also Dharma. He's the law that keeps everything in its place. And in some places, Sri Aurobindo refers to that role of his. I think that is happening here.
And what about Shiva and his dance?
Yes, he also has this role of creating and destroying. So these are very, very deep insights which have got expressed in symbolic myths, in images. Here Sri Aurobindo is putting them in wonderful mantric words and lines to help us to share those deep insights.
This passage gives me a greater appreciation of what we're going through in the world today. Because he says, I hail the almighty and victorious dead.
Yes.
Then he goes on and says, I have given thee thy awful shape of dread.
Yes, let's read on with that. Who's the next one to read? Susmita. Yes, thank you. The awful perception which this instrument of the divine gives us of the imperfection and the suffering and the unsatisfactoriness of this world we live in may be the factor that spurs us to really commit ourselves to an effort to see and love and clasp God's light and help in turning this earthly life into the light divine. At least it is the spur for progress of all kinds, human attempts at progress and at achievement and at a better life. Did Chico read?
Yes.
Did you have a chance to read, Chico?
Never mind.
No, you can read now. One day, man, too.
One day, man, too, shall know thy fatherless heart. Of silence and the brooding peace of night, and great obedience to eternal law, and the calm reflexive pity in the gates. But now, all timeless, mightiness, stand aside and lead the path of my incarnate form. Release the radiant God from thy black mask. Release the soul of the world called Sanchevan. Free from thy clutch of pain and ignorance, that he may stand master of life and faith, man's representative in the house of God, the mate of wisdom and the spouse of light, the eternal
bridegroom
of the eternal bride.
Thank you. You notice this is not Savitri speaking. This is the mighty mother, hailing death, describing his role, and ordering him in this particular case, at this particular time, to stand aside, to make an exception.
How wrong I was already.
Thou art my shadow.
In my shadow, yes. Yes, my shadow and my instrument. And I'm not telling you now to suspend your work. Live death a while, be still my instrument. But a time will come when death too will be changed. No? One day, even human beings will understand what you represent, your fathomless heart of silence. Yes, calm, inflexible pity in thy gaze, and grave obedience to eternal law. You're doing your job. You have your role to play, and you are doing it. But now, stand aside. She says, relieve the radiant God from thy black mask. Within you, there's a glorious Godhead of light, but you've put on this black mask. No? Take it away and set free Satyavan, who is the soul of the world. Set him free from the grip of pain and ignorance. That's what Sri Aurobindo said at the beginning in the author's note, that Satyavan is the soul carrying the truth within it, but descended here in the material world into the grip of death and ignorance. So she's commanding death, the mighty mother is commanding death to free this particular soul who represents the soul of the world, Satyavan. Let him stand master of life and fate. He has to be the mate of Savitri, the mate of wisdom, the spouse, the husband of light. He has to become the eternal bridegroom of the eternal bride.
The eternal
bridegroom.
So now this line, earlier line, 910.
Yes.
It's not clear to me.
It's not clear to.
Our death is spurring work in greatness in work of human beings. He says you are also by our spur to greatness in his works.
Yes.
That our death spurs us to.
Actually, this is quite a common idea, that if we didn't have this threat of a short life, we would just lie back and enjoy things. But actually, the fact of suffering and death and imperfection is what spurs us to make things better in whatever way we can, or at least to aspire for things to be better in whatever way we can.
The noble ones.
Hmm?
The noble only. The old people who really like being like this ignorant, they keep on enjoying the ignorance. Yeah. Only the noble kind of person will be spurred to go on.
No, I think even the ignorant get spurred.
Well, doesn't seem to be.
Perhaps they won't be. They won't be doing it for the sake of consciously for the sake of humanity, but they.
Yeah,
nobody's allowed to stand still on this earth. I don't think so.
You want to get out of it somehow. Yes.
Somehow to escape. Yes.
It's interesting. We're reading this on this date because this is the date in Mother's Prayers where. Those lines she changed the day that the supermine came down. Remember September 25th, 1914, that prayer. So it's also the birthday of Shiva, who was, wants to do a screenplay called Fourth Dimension based on Savitri. The scene is to be filmed, the meeting of Savitri and Satyavan, he has envisioned in this.
You're
Unity
speaking,
garden,
of, you're speaking
garden.
About Shiva Vangara.
Yes, it's
yeah.
So I thought that is the power of Shiva. Somebody said to me the other day when I was lamenting about all this destruction, the world, he said that's how the world changed to destroy the old thing for the.
Mm. Yes.
Well, I don't understand the first sentence. One day Manchu shall know.
Thy fathomless heart, thy fathomless heart of silence.
That means that something like later.
In evolution, we shall begin to understand and appreciate this role that death is playing. And we will even take it upon ourselves.
You mean the role of death as the silence, as the rest,
Yes.
I thought that was before, like, a little bit, no? That understanding of death as that.
As something positive, yes.
Yes.
No, here she says, know. We human beings will learn to know. At the moment, what we notice is the awful shape of dread. We dread dying, and death represents for us a sword of terror and grief and pain. But there may come a time when we have a different understanding of this process. Yes. Savitri was rejecting that. Death was tempting her and saying, look, give up all this struggle and so on. You don't understand why he's saying something.
It's like something positive in the future.
Maybe it's something positive in the future.
It's a stepping stone, I think. Much higher thing. Before now, in the present life, we understand the value of death.
Positive roles he plays.
Positive role, but at this moment is not. We are not ready to take this role like this, no?
But we understand. After reading this, discussing this, we understand the value of death and suffering and pain. Why we are having this?
But it's several things together. One is man shall know thy fathomless heart of silence and the brooding peace of night. And grave obedience to eternal law, and the calm, inflexible pity in thy gaze. This characteristic of death, it's a complex thing. And now we are only seeing certain aspects of it. One day in evolution, we may understand, no? Sri Aurobindo, he says that the ability to overcome death will be part of the supramentalized process. But that doesn't mean that nobody will ever change their bodies. So we may understand better what it is that death offers to us in our progress.
Mm. Just pop in my head and help me see whether it's true, you feel it's true or not. But science has perhaps found the tool of death for what has just been going on and just been said. And that tool may be DNA, the laws of heredity in there.
why evolution occurs according to Darwinian modern science there is because of the what DNA can give to the next life after death.
Yeah, they are hopeful of being able to extend human life indefinitely in various ways. So this is one of the spurs of death, you know. Then,
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to stop soon. We came to this end of this speech of death. Shall we listen to Mother reading some of these lines?
The power that conquered the cemetery, the presence chambered in lotus secrecy, came down and held the center in her bar. It stirred in the lotus of a sort of stone. It glided into the lotus of her heart. It poured into a neighbor's lotus depth, broke into the cave where cold world energy slept sleep, and smote the southern hooded serpent wall. The blazing tower and clasped the world self above. Thus chained, she waited for the word to speak. Eternity looked into the eyes of death, and darkness saw God's living reality. Then a voice was heard that sees the stillness, said, I hail thee, almighty and victorious death. Thou grandeur darkness of the infinite, thou art my shadow and my instrument. Pollute the radiant God from thy black mask, release the soul of the world, called Satyava. Who spoke? Death, unconvinced, resisted still. A pressure of intolerable force weighed on his unbowed head and stubborn breast. Light, like a burning tongue, licked up his soul. Light was a luminous torture in his heart. Light caused a splendid agony through his nerves. His darkness muttered, perishing in her blade. He called to his strength, but it refused his call. His body was eaten by light, his spirit devoured. Afar he fled, shunning her dreaded touch, and refused to in the retreating night. In the dream twilight of that symbol world, the dark universal shadow disappeared, vanishing into the void from which it came. As if deprived of its original force, the twilight realm passed fading from their souls, and Satyavan and Savitri were alone, but neither stirred. Between those figures rose a mute, invisible, and translucent wall. In the long black moments for nothing could move, all waited on the unknown inscrutable.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.